condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, I'm playing Stacky Jacks. I'm Tim Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 1650. We have a rare treat today, although they're not a couple of right-wingers going to gang up on me. They're one from each side of the fence. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill, as we always do on Wednesday. We also have Mr. Brendan Cornyn on, because we're going to try and talk a little bit about the unemployment issues. And I sent you dudes. It was actually a very good article last Sunday I sent around everybody regarding can you force people to go back to work? Because with the $600 boost, although I don't know, do we know anybody who's actually getting that money?
I don't, no.
Well, evidently, if you file for your regular, if you guys can tell me if I'm wrong here. When you're filing for your regular unemployment, with the state, there's a $600 a week boost till the end of, I believe, June from the federal government. So
July. It's the end of July.
July? July? Okay.
July 31st.
And so they, you actually could be making, in virtually every industry, you could be making more than you did at work. There's a list here from the, here we go. What happens to unemployment benefits if you're called back to work? But all the way down the line, it ends up being like $21 an hour or $23 an hour, somewhere in there. So it's, now I don't know that, obviously, if you're being tossed from a job where you're not, you're not getting any hospitalization or anything. I mean, that's a problem. So, I mean, it's for every individual person, it could be good or bad. But the reason why I asked Brendan and Kevin is because they're way closer to this than I am. What if you call somebody back to work? And they're on unemployment, and they say pound sand. Well, what happens? Kevin, do you have a...
Well, it depends on why they tell you to pound sand.
Well,
in other words, look, if it's, no, I make more staying home, so pound sand or some nicer version of that, then you can lose the job.
Well, then what's the mechanism of that?
You abandon the job, and they have a right. But if it's fear of... fear of catching the virus at work, and that's articulated, then we're getting into a shadier area. And I'll defer to our attorney friend here and let him talk a little more about that.
Okay, well, let's...
No, I agree with that. It all depends on the circumstances, because there are certain qualifications where you can refuse to go back to work if it's an unsafe condition. What's really unusual about the current situation is that because of the massive layoffs due to the coronavirus, people will often be called back to their same job. That's a different scenario than if, take, for example, back in 2008, 2009, when there were a lot of layoffs. Somebody who worked in a meatpacking factory may be offered a job in a newspaper industry, one could call back. So in that case, it's a little bit unusual to say, no, I'm not going to go to a job. But in this case, as Kevin pointed out, this could be a safety reason. And, you know, likewise, you couldn't say, if the only job that I have offered to me when I'm out of work is to, to be a window washer with no safety harness. Well, I'm afraid if I'm going to hang from a 50-story building with no safety harness, that it's a risk of my life, so I'm going to turn that down. And the state would be hard-pressed to say, we're going to deny you unemployment benefits. In the case we're looking at right now, where were dealing with something, well, you were a meatpacker, so come on back to the meatpack factory. Or you were a restaurateur, restaurant worker, a bartender, come on back and tend bar. And they're saying, no, I have a significant health risk by going back there because of the coronavirus. It is murky because, remember, the whole idea of unemployment was to help people get through tough times when they're unemployed. It was not to give them a paycheck just to give them a paycheck. I mean, that's a different concept than welfare. I mean, this is unemployment benefits over the course, so there is a difference here, and that difference can change under the circumstances.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. If I am running someplace, whatever it is, PTI Skiers, we've never laid anybody off, thank God, but so we did, and I call up and somebody's getting unemployment, and I say, okay, well, guess what? Business is back, come on back, here's your job. And you say, no, I'm not coming back. I'm doing just fine here, especially with this extra $600 a week. Now, now, obviously, the unemployment benefits from the state, if we do lay somebody off, and the unemployment fees that PTI pays, right, if we're in the habit of laying people off and people, are constantly going on unemployment benefits, our rates, our taxes, for lack of a better term,
yeah, your experience rate is going to drive
right.
The premiums up to the state.
Right. So our things come up. So if we say, well, gee, this Brendan guy doesn't want to come back to work, his job's right here, and he's sitting on his ass at home. Of course, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter to me what you're doing at home. The fact is, the job is now open, and you're getting paid.
Yeah,
and
darn it, that Brendan guy's supposed to sit on his ass at work.
Right. That's right.
That's right. If I'm going to do nothing, I'm going to do nothing at work.
Well, and what do I do? I pick up the phone or I file a report to the state saying we asked Brendan to come back to work and he said no. Now, of course, I know that I was on unemployment once whenever I got laid off from Pullman, but so many people got laid off at the same time they didn't even attempt to go through the normal procedure. But isn't the normal procedure that back in the day, every week or every month, you're supposed to show up at the unemployment office with like three or four interviews you've had or something?
Yeah, well, that's part of how you do it, but there is a self-reporting that every so often, whether it's a week or a month, I don't think you have to do it in person anymore. You're right. I remember those lines outside the unemployment office where you were supposed to go in and say, what effort have you made in the last week or 2 weeks or however long it's been to show us that you are looking for unemployment, that you're not just sitting home on your ass collecting a paycheck, but you're actively looking for some job that you're capable of doing. We're in a different situation now, and I don't think that there are enough unemployment offices anymore to process that. But there's also a distinction between looking for employment and turning down the job that you had before.
Well, that's what I mean.
We're in really uncharted territory here.
They can't really if you go out and somebody calls you out of the blue and says we want you to have a job as a high wire electric guy, and you've never done that before. I could see where you'd say, "I don't want to do that necessarily." But
let's go to what most cases are going to be. Most cases are going to be built around the fear of going back and catching the virus. So there's going to be some people who are going to say, "Hey, I make more staying home or that." But the challenge for a business is when I call back and I say, "No, I don't think it's safe to go back to work yet." So the first thing is that the business probably has a right to say, I have done everything I can within any reasonable and maybe beyond reasonable tactics to be able to make the workplace fairly safe for you. And so you have to come back, and if you don't, you've abandoned your job, and I can hire somebody to replace you. That's possible. Now, you could get some pushback because, there is, the Occupational Safety and Health Act where if you have a reasonable expectation that it's not safe, then you can refuse to work. And so I think there's this big gray area that only with some experience, as more and more businesses reopen and we start to see what works in the workplace and what doesn't, that you're really going to start to settle that for the most part. Now, you also may have some people who say, "Hey, I'm high risk. I've had heart procedures or something where you could say, you know, I'm different from everybody else, so I, you know, I should not have to come back yet. And I'm not abandoning my job. I am just waiting until it's safe for people like me.
Well, I mean, clearly with this particular deal, you could easily say, well, you think you've done everything properly. I want, you know, a year of proof out of your place that nobody's gotten this thing. Well,
there's a concept in the law called reasonable accommodation. And when somebody is, and you know, this is true for somebody who is claiming, I can't go back to work because you're discriminating against me wearing a beard. If you're a Sikh, you're prejudiced against me from having a beard. So you've got to make a reasonable accommodation. It's unclear yet what a reasonable accommodation is going to mean in the context of the coronavirus and going back to work. And I'm thinking, you know, restaurants or bars. If the restaurant or bar does not allow or does not require their customers or their workers to wear face masks, is just one example. And the person and I am hired back to be a bartender, and nobody's wearing a mask. So I'm afraid of getting sick. So what's a reasonable accommodation for me? And if you don't make a reasonable accommodation, you as the employer are opening yourself up to a challenge of saying, you're providing an unsafe workplace, I don't have to comply, you cannot cut my benefits.
But we don't have, yeah, we don't want to be in a situation.
My issue there is, if you're in a bar and you have to wear a face mask, I don't know, do they make
you
face masks with holes for straws?
Yeah. No, but you get the
and,
point.
And would you suck down a shot with a, yeah, a shot of whiskey with a straw?
Well, that's why I think it's really ironic when people are talking about opening up restaurants but requiring you to wear face masks. How are you going to eat and how are you going to drink?
Well, see, my issue is, you guys know that I always fall back, because it's comfortable for me, into the idea of people making their own decisions and letting the market sort of take care of it. I mean, when you went out to, I'll go back to something old. By the way, it could be one of the only things that would be here a million years from now, if everybody died, is Hoover Dam. I mean, the people who died, most of them, were the high scalers. The guys that were on the rocks and the little platforms chipping away and putting dynamite in there and so forth. The guys that worked in the cement factory, I don't think any of those guys died. If they did, they, you know, somehow or another walked off the thing or something, but, so the high schoolers made more money. I mean, right now, the guys who work on the electric lines for the Commonwealth Edison make more dough than the guy who hangs in a cubicle. I mean, people have taken risks for more money since God created men.
Risk was invented.
Since risk was invented.
Yeah.
I mean, the coronavirus is not going to change that, although we do have an awful lot of people now who feel that their view of what the world should be is different than what it's been for thousands of years. And I don't know, they seem to me to be somewhat the danger. I feel that I am at risk, therefore I'm not going to work. Okay, well, the bartender job is to not wear a face mask, it's to talk to people, and those people are drinking, so they're not wearing one. And guess what? Well, you're up your pay from 10 to 20 bucks an hour, because we're raising the price of the drinks. And if you like it or lump it. I mean, because that happens all over the place. And people know that working in a steel factory is more dangerous than working in the hardware aisle at Sears, for God's sake. People have known that for generations, and they get paid more. So, I mean, I don't know.
This is a different kind of dangerous situation in the workplace. Because of the fear of getting this virus. I mean, I think the same thing is true if the flu pandemic came back, or if some other virus came back that was airborne and could be shown to be highly contagious and deadly. But I think you've got a really good point here, Chief, that over the course of the last couple of months, the real purpose for stay at home has changed. I think originally the idea was, at least in the minds of many people, if not the medical professionals, if not the Fauci's and the Burks, the idea of stay at home and isolating was to stop the virus. Now it's to mitigate the damage and not overwhelm the healthcare system. Now,
you know, I disagree. I think it's the flip of that. I think it was originally to, you know, flatten the curve was all we heard, and now you're getting a lot of people saying, "Oh no, we have to eradicate the virus." I think it's the opposite, Brendan.
Yeah, Brendan, okay. I think you had that backwards.
Okay, but I do think there's a mindset now that so staying at home and isolating is not going to stop the virus. It is here, and it is going to spread. The question is, how do you mitigate that? And really, the underlying question is, why do you want to mitigate it? The first answer is that we want to mitigate it so that our healthcare system is not overwhelmed. The second is we want to mitigate it and slow it down so that we can find a therapeutic cure or a vaccine, neither of which will be 100% effective to cure you or stop it. And I think the third one would be to stop it so that it doesn't spread any further, which is also unrealistic.
Well, Fauci, yeah, what you said...
And when I go back and say, you know, at the beginning everybody was saying flatten the curve, flatten the curve, I don't think a lot of people who were saying that have a clue what that really means. That, you know, there's not the understanding of statistics, not the understanding of math. And the idea is if you took a normal curve of going up and then starting to taper off, and it approximates that normal distribution, that if you just were to put your hand on the top of that curve and push down, you know, it's like pushing on a balloon. The air is going somewhere, so all you're doing is changing the shape. You're not changing the area under the curve. You're not changing the number of cases. You're simply just redistributing them, and, you know, with the idea that you're not going to overwhelm the healthcare system by doing that, because you're not going to throw too much at it at any given time. And
well, that's right. So, I mean, if you looked at the graphs of the various curves, with the big spike in the middle and then coming out against the lower curve, you know, those are usually in different colors for example, to look at them. But when you looked at the end date, if you looked at the end date of the graph being July of 2021, both lines were in the same spot with the total number of people.
I've seen a lot of them differently. All you've done is elongate the period of time.
Well, yeah, that's, you could elongate it, but I mean, typically a lot of the numbers, if you go out far enough, I mean, I'm not talking about, obviously if you have a spike that goes really high and you're looking at the end date of June 1st of 2020, that the flattening of the curve is going to be different. But if you take a longer term view of, say, July 1st of 2021, the two numbers of total infections approximate each other. So you see the big spike going up and then flattening out over a long period of time, and in about a year, the total numbers are going to be close to the same.
I actually believe, that you guys can disagree on this, but, well, two things. Is our total lack of coordinated leadership, shall I say, has been an unmitigated disaster in this whole thing. But I'm going to say this. I mean, you guys can disagree. Maybe Kevin would. I don't know. I think that pushing the curve out like they did, I think the amount of deaths under the curve have been greatly reduced, because the 6 to 8 weeks that we've gained after we lost 6 to 8 weeks somehow have really changed the way we go about treating it. And I think the amount of cases of people that could be saved now is way higher than it was 10 weeks ago.
You know, that's probably true, Tom, and I think that's a good observation. The part where it's hard to tell is because of the way we count this.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Count deaths. We really have no idea what impact we're getting. So, we've talked a lot about, you know, having to make decisions without good data.
Yes.
And the implications of that over time. And now we're talking about, we're still making decisions with skewed data, with, you know, data that's, for lack of a better word, that has been, that's manipulated, and I don't necessarily mean that as, you know, some big nefarious plot, but what I do mean is that, you know, how do you really know? How do you really know if someone who had a heart attack with coronavirus is a heart attack victim or a coronavirus victim? How do you know if someone in the final stages of cancer, well, you kind of do, actually,
yeah.
You're in the final stages of cancer and you die and you had coronavirus, are you a coronavirus victim or are you a cancer victim? And, you know, so that makes all of this a little murkier. It's not helpful. It's a really bad way to try and count, but it's also the way that we have built into compensation for hospitals, because they're getting paid more now for coronavirus, so therefore they're going to report as much as they can.
Well, Kevin,
we're going to get exactly what we reward.
Kevin, we've got some people that I talked to, one lady I talked to yesterday, actually a Actually, I was on the radio with her, and she said, look at the amount of new cases. I said, you can't look at the amount of new cases as a shack when you're looking at them the same week you start doing some real testing. Because, of course, they're going to go up. I mean, how could they not?
Right. Well, I was going to make that exact point.
Yeah.
I was going to make that exact point that when Kevin was talking, that you look at the total number of tests, and you look at the infection rate, and also you look at the death rate. So if, for example, think about New York. If you tested 100 people in New York, and 50% of them, which was the case for a while, 50% of them were testing positive, and 3% of them, or 5%, or whatever the number was, were dying. Those are high numbers. But if instead of testing 100, your infection rate stays the same and your death rate stays the same, but you've tested 200, you've cut those numbers in half. So it really depends on how you test for your baseline. That's really important about this in determining first how far it's spread, but also how deadly and how much hospitalization is needed. Now, that's a different argument than overwhelming the healthcare system, because that's close to the spread and how much you need to mitigate the spread of the virus, but it doesn't identify. It's a different question than how many people are actually infected.
Well, it comes down to, I mean, it's startling to me. Well, first of all, to get back to our original subject, how do you tell somebody that they have to come back to work and they shouldn't be afraid when you're head medical guy in the country says we should stay closed until we get a vaccine?
Well, there's two things.
Yeah, that's not
about
exactly
that.
What he said, but I get what you're asking. Go ahead, Brendan.
There's two things about that. I mean, it seems incongruous to me that if the White House itself is being tested daily to see if somebody's temperature goes from 98 to 99 and have them stay home, that's a completely different scenario than telling the guy in the meatpacking plant that you've got to go back to work, and by the way, you've got no testing, so you may or may not be next to a person who's infected. There's an incongruity there. And I agree that what Fauci is saying is not stay at home until there's a vaccine, but if you open up too soon, the risk greatly increases that we're going to have many more people infected who otherwise would not be infected because of social distancing. So the risk factor is much higher if you go back to work too soon.
Well, he said that he thought there was going to be a vaccine in 6 months. Why he comes up with that clue? I know we got an awful lot of bright people working on it, a lot of different companies. I also know that there's never once been a vaccine for a coronavirus. And if it turns out...
And for most of the significant infections, it's been a four-year time limit to find a vaccine.
Well, they claim it was a four-year time limit for mumps, but the fact is mumps was around for centuries. Where they decide it's 4 years, I have no idea. Somebody just decided in 1 year we're going to get a vaccine, and it took 4 years?
Now, mumps may have been around for thousands of years, but by the time epidemiology got to a point where they could say we can look for a vaccine and we know how to find and develop vaccines, it was about a four-year period to develop a vaccine.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is we have this cross-purpose type of thing, and the idea that, I mean, we've never come across a disease like this, and Carl is, you know, 80-85% of the people can get it tomorrow and it's not a problem. It's a problem for the other 20 or 15. It's certainly a problem if you're co-opted. And so the idea that you're going to go someplace, and by the way, it is absolutely not contained. It hasn't been contained, and it will not be contained. That's why, so the idea of having tests in the street where you either have all the hypochondriacs running in line or people that are sick and want to know if they have it, that is not any kind of a test that gives anybody with any numbers any. Does that give you any knowledge whatsoever, Kevin? I don't see how it does, unless you have some kind of a sample. And the thing I was reading this weekend, it said if you find out that it's nowhere near as contained as people thought it was, which is probably the truth, and you're
about 10 studies that tell you that now.
Yeah, but so if your death rate is half of 1%, because you're not, if you get a vaccine tomorrow, you're not going to get everybody to take the vaccine because half the people are not going to believe it, so you're not going to do anything with that half of 1% anyway. You might get it down to 0.4. So you could actually make the case that a 2 year from now vaccine, you know, it'll be nice, but it actually doesn't do anything to those numbers, at least between now and then.
Well, there's another part.
It also depends on how intrusive the vaccine is, too, because if it's if it's a in any way a painful process. Remember, most of the vaccines are giving you antibodies. You take a flu shot, for example, it gives some people the flu. So the idea being that if the cure has implications, there's also going to be people, where you're just going to say, do you want to do this or not? And they're going to say, I'll take my chances.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, we're going to head off to break.
There's also another fallacy about testing that I'm hearing from a lot of folks, and even a little bit in our conversation, is that testing just means that it's identified that you have contracted the virus.
Yeah.
Once you test positive, it's too late to say you're not going to get the virus.
Well, absolutely.
So it's really more in the way of identifying how widespread it is.
Counting. Yeah, and the more significant test.
All right, guys, we got to head off to break. Brendan, thank you very much. We'll talk to you on Tuesday like we usually do, bud. And have a good weekend, if not before. Who knows? SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 70. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, hello, big stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howley. He's Mr. Weber. We have an abbreviated version here of what's going on around the world. SP futures up 19, NASDAQ futures up 75, but we dropped 85 points in the last hour yesterday, kind of after Fauci spoke and somebody in California came out and said it'd be 3-4 months. So, wait for my computer is dying here. But evidently, what happens, Manny, when it says, it's updating and then it says, couldn't complete the change, undoing the changes, and tries to do them again, like for the third time.
That's not good.
No. Anyway, I'll get some of the stuff around the rest of the world in a minute, but what do you got for this traffic, weather, sports?
Sure, 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We are squeaky clean on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, Chief. Absolutely no accidents, slowdowns, congestion, stalls, significant road construction to report in the area. Looking good in all directions. So enjoy a nice, quiet Wednesday morning commute, at least if you're traveling around this early. Weather today, it's going to be a nice day. Partly cloudy skies, some sunshine, a bit warmer than it's been the last few days. Those will reach a high of 62 degrees in the city. Right now, it is crystal clear and 47 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 92 today. Right now, it's clear and 71. Only thing going on in sports right now is the current proposal between Major League Baseball's owners and its players union. The current proposal on the table is an 82-game regional schedule and universal designated hitter, 30-man active roster with a 20-player taxi squad, 14 teams in the postseason with games played in home cities in October, and a 50-50 revenue split for players and owners. And the players, according to reports, the ball is in their court. So we'll watch that closely.
Why are they trying to sneak the designated hitter into this?
It's a good question. I think it's clear that's where they're heading, and they're going to use this as an opportunity to sneak that in. But that's the latest on that. So we'll monitor that closely as we all pray for sports to return. Chief.
I was on, as a guest on Joe Esposito's show yesterday, which is always fun because, but it also gives me a stab since we, our listenership is, let's put it this way. I don't think too many are everyman. Everybody, little upper cruster, I think, in terms of knowledge of what we're talking about. So it's always fun for me to get on a more general show to find out exactly what everybody else is thinking because the questions are different if you get from people. And
sure.
It's an education and, and she says, well, you guys are stocks and jacks, right? And I said, well, I should have said, well, Maddie's more, and Kevin are the jacks guys, but because they know all this stuff, not me. Well, the first question was, our tyrannical mayor, Lori Lightfoot, says that it's not Major League Baseball, it's a Cub decision, it's her decision. So my response was, well, the thing that I just read, I said, and I'm missing my man, Mr. Weber, I said, is there's going to be three regional areas where the games are played in, Manny, is it Phoenix, and then there's two spots in Florida, or is there one in Texas? I know one in Florida, one in Phoenix, but there must be two in Florida. Because there's three areas with 10 teams apiece, right? And they're going to play in those places. Because they have enough stadiums down there, obviously, with spring training. I didn't know where the third one was, but either one of you guys can find that. But
I haven't heard anything like that. As far as I know, they're playing in their regular stadiums. They're just
No, absolutely not.
They're just playing regionally.
Well, okay, this might be the latest, but earlier, a week ago, that's why I said I didn't have you guys to help
I know
out.
Back in the beginning, they were saying Arizona was offering, you know, teams to play it, you know, the Cactus League, and Florida was saying they could play the Grapefruit League, and maybe that's still on the table, but the latest proposal I saw was, you know, in an effort to limit travel, they were going to divide the league into three 10-team regional divisions, so American League, National League is thrown
okay.
out. And you have, like, Cubs and White Sox, Royals, Cardinals, Twins, You know, Tigers, et cetera, in the Central, and they would just play each other with limiting travel between those cities and testing players going in and out of the park, essentially. And
The other one was like that more than a week ago, so this was a quick change.
Yeah, that's the latest I've heard. Now, nothing's been obviously decided. They're still pretty early in the negotiations.
Well, because the original one was designed so everybody could stay in their same hotel, so you could, you know, nobody would get sick there, hopefully. And you would only go to the same five parks, so it would be easier to keep everything clean, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and by the way, you asked about the Universal DH, and I'd like to hear Kevin's thought on this, too. But supposedly, they tried to sneak that in under the guise that the MLB and the MLBPA are worried about increased injury risk following the shutdown for pitchers, so they don't want them hitting.
What's that? Okay.
Well, that could be part of it. Part of it could be saying it's a way to expand the rosters. I'm reasonably sure that the unions have always, the MLBPA has always wanted it because it's an extra roster spot. It's an extra jobs for people.
100% agree. And plus, I don't think pitchers really want to hit for the most part anyway. Now, some do, but the overwhelming majority, they don't hit in the minor leagues. It's universal DH in the minor leagues, I believe. I don't think they want to hit.
Well, if I was a pitcher that actually knew what I was doing, I would say that was such an amazing advantage, I wouldn't want to give that up.
I agree. There are a small percentage of pitchers that do it really well, whether it's, you know, bunting and working counts and, you know, being able to put the ball in play, et cetera. And, you know, the Cubs have had some guys like that over the years that are a joy to watch, and it is an advantage over the other pitcher.
Well, but on the other hand, some pitchers like it because then they get to pitch against the other team's pitcher every time through the lineup, or at least the first couple of times through the lineup.
Right. Well,
that's right.
And
that's a little bit of a break.
Well, that was one of the things. So evidently, I putzed that answer when I don't have you guys around. See what happens to me. But I had not read that one. The one I read like last week, it was still talking about the Arizona Florida thing. So this must be something new, or relatively new.
It could be. Anyways, before we get too far away from the first half hour's topic, I just want to throw in a couple other things that we didn't get to while Brendan was here. One is whether they're unionized or not, your employees do have the right to do a concerted activity. So if your employees across the board don't think that you have made your workplace safe and they all walk out, then you're very, very limited in what you can do from a disciplinary standpoint and what you can do to replace them. Now, it has to be done on a good faith belief that working conditions are unsafe, but that can become an issue. That's part of the National Labor Relations Act. Also, Brendan mentioned reasonable accommodation. That's totally built into ADA, to the Americans with Disability Act, which I believe it was in the 70s. I don't remember exactly what year, but it was later. It was 90s. Anyway, the ADA, requires reasonable accommodations for any kind of handicap. So now you start to say, once you are in the high risk group, you know, say you have a heart condition or something like that. Once you're in that, then there has to be some kind of accommodation for it, as long as you still have the ability to do the job. So that could force some work at home issues. The last point I want to make about it is not a legal issue, but it's a management issue. That when you have people who have fears about coming into work, how you treat them is going to affect everybody. It's going to affect other people's workloads, so you have it from that standpoint. If you don't do something and you allow people to stay out and you can't replace them, then all you're doing is heaping work on other people, and that can create some discord. By the same token, if you treat the people who don't want to come in real cavalierly, if you're very dismissive of them, if it's perceived that you're not treating them well, that you don't care, that also has an effect on your labor force. And its motivation, because how you treat me is everybody else is going to observe how you treat me. And they're going to draw their own conclusions about how they would be treated in any kind of other situation that might apply. And so that undercuts loyalty, it undercuts morale and those kinds of things. So you have, there's a lot to balance here. There's a whole lot to, you know, to keep under control for people in management and leadership roles. And I think it's we are really, really going to test the quality of leadership in the business world right now. And I've long thought that it was sorely lacking. Imagine what it's going to be like over the next 6 months, a year, whatever.
Well, how can somebody listen to Fauci's speech yesterday and he just calls up his boss and says, well, I'm afraid you can't guarantee me I'm not going to get it. Nobody is ever going to be able to guarantee anybody they're not going to get this thing.
Right. So, and this is going to go back to the history that we're developing now, that in places where they're actually opening plants. So even Michigan is opening the auto manufacturing plants that are here. And it's one of the most restrictive states. But if you go look at a state like Georgia, where they haven't, it's still early, but they haven't seen any spike up in cases. As you start to see that and see how different accommodations work, what's going to be established is what is considered reasonable and what is considered not necessary. And once that pattern gets established, then a lot of businesses are going to be able to do the same. They're going to be able to start saying, okay, we are doing what is generally accepted as safe and as reasonably safe as we can make it. And once that's established, then the power is going to shift back to the employer.
I'm going to say this unequivocally. The more I read about the incredible penetration that these diseases made in American society, there is no way on earth you open up a 400-person Ford plant, and in a week you're not going to find a person there that doesn't have it. Now, does that mean you shut the whole thing down?
Well, no, but you're also going to have a lot of people who've already had it, and you're going to have, you're going to get it. The disease is more severe than the flu, but it's going to be no different than the flu.
Right.
Flu goes through a workplace all the time.
Well, that's right.
When a few people get it, a lot of people get it. Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen, Tom. The question is it going to happen in mass, or is it going to happen in an approximation of the rest of the population?
I think unfortunately, what you've seen when you send people home is that if somebody has it at home, everybody gets it at home. It's the same thing happens there. I mean, there's a reason why our mothers brought kids with measles over to kids who didn't have them, so everybody get them at once. I mean, duh.
Yeah, and people say, well, that's measles. That as recently as, I think, 1970, there were like 2 million measles deaths in the world.
I'm going to say,
as recently as 1990, it was down to one. Way more than we've seen for this virus.
It has to do with,
we don't believe China's numbers, in which case,
oh, yeah,
that'll make it much worse.
Just real quick, because I want to go to the economic questions I got yesterday when I was on the air. If you're 8 years old or 10 years old, and you get, if you get measles in a 60s household where mom is home all day long, not that people don't take care of their kids now, they do. Mom is home all day long. The care was about as good as you could get. Food was warm, place was warm. Doctor was on call if you needed him. And I'm not going to say that out of, 1,000 kids in St. John Fisher that got the measles in the same week, that all of a sudden that there weren't three or four that didn't have a bad time of it. I would never say that. Then I wouldn't have, because I was too dumb. But yet I also know that in the Civil War camps, measles was one of the most debilitating diseases there were, because everybody had, foot and mouth disease. They might have had cholera. They might have typhoid. Who the hell? They weren't eating very well. World War I trenches was the same way, right? So, it's all about care and a lot of things on this stuff. That's why I think that the vaccine, I sure hope that Fauci's right, but I believe that we, as time goes by, are going to be able to mitigate the fatalities in this dramatically by better and better care. And I actually talked to somebody on, son, this is pretty scary, Kevin. And this lady had one of her friends over, works in a hospital, does a lot of COVID stuff. She says the people they get from these nursing homes, like the lower end nursing homes, because these people are in awful shape. I mean, in nursing homes, you figure most people aren't in the best of shape to start with, but she goes, the care in these places, where the hell are they coming from? I mean, I've only been in...
But you're right. To start with, you know, the reason a lot of people go to nursing homes in the first place is because they're at a point where they can't care for themselves.
But there's some that are, you know, Medicaid only. I don't know if you ever want to walk in one of those places, Kevin. I visited one of my friends a couple times in one of those. It was an awful experience. It was nowhere near where we had my stepfather or anything like that. There weren't sheets on half the beds. The place stunk. If a measles ran through there, you'd have a problem. Just saying. Anyway,
some of the early on, again, making decisions without good data, sending positive patients back to nursing homes, and that's not just a New York thing. New York's not the only place that did that, but it's the one that did it most famously. Those are decisions that have cost lives.
Because
at least shorten them, because you have the at-risk population already, and then we're piling on top of that, a virus that spreads easily.
The hospitals have made people come out of the COVID ward, shall we say, or area, make rounds through the rest of the hospital with the same outfit, and I think cause a lot of damage too.
Well, they had to make rounds for the rest of the hospital. Nobody else was allowed to come to work.
Well, that's right. It's pretty insane.
This is a lesson for all of our business people. If you're making decisions based on, you know, sort of what you feel, and you're reacting to situations rather than using data and testing what you do, this is the kind of stuff you're going to get. You're going to get a lot of bad with any good that you think that you implemented just because you're smart.
Well, we had a few other calls when I was on. Again, this is just trying to say what the rest of the world is thinking. And I said, you know, she goes, what's the matter with the governor? The governor's doing? I said, well, the governor is that a flaming ego. And there's things that you have to make decisions, you know, fast. And you know they're not always going to be correct. But his ego, he hasn't turned around and mitigated any one of them. He never once said, gee, the mattress stores could open because these other guys are selling mattresses. Nobody's dying there. I mean, the one yesterday was they had a sheriff on from, I don't know, one of these counties that has a bunch of lakes. Evidently, he said that you can put watercraft on the lake, only two people in the boat, even if you can't have more than two, even if the four people are family members and you got them stuck at home together anyway. Well, you think you should relax that one a little, Kevin, after somebody says, hey, Governor, this one don't sound so good. But there hasn't been one that I know of that has been. And the other question was, she said she's over 60. I would never say that, but she did. That she doesn't necessarily feel that comfortable going to a Cup game because she's in the over 60 crowd. And I said, well, Joan, I don't feel necessarily any different than you. I said, what I do feel is that when it's time for me to go, and I think there's no containment of this, it's my call or your call and not Lori's. That's the issue I have with. But the other thing was, nobody understands what the hell the Fed's doing. There were calls coming in. What do you think of this negative interest? What does that even mean? Kevin, nobody even... There's a couple guys on the trading floor have called me in the last week and said, Chief, explain to me what negative interest rates are. And I said, well, think of it this way. If you buy a 10-year bond and the interest rate is 4%, I said, okay, and you pay $100 for it, the coupon's 4%, your interest rate is 4%. So you're going to get $4 a year, and at the end of 10 years, they're going to give you $100 back. I mean, we all understand that. Well, yeah, that's how bonds work. Okay. Well, what if I were to pay, if all of a sudden the market rate went to 2%, what happens to the bond? I said, the bond's going to go up in price, so it'll be, you know, 110 or something, or 112. I hadn't actually done the math, but so in other words, that gives you the $4 a year plus the $100 back equals the interest rate is now 2%, or we probably have to pay more like 120. So it's now 2%. If you do the math, then, because now the investment isn't 100, the investment's 120. And I said, what if you get to the point where you pay somebody, you know, $150 for the band to where you're getting 4 hours a year, that's 40, plus the 100 hours at the end of 10 years, you're only going to get 140 and you just paid 150. And the guy says, well, why would anybody be that stupid? I said, well, that's what negative interest rates are.
Good question.
Good question. I said, the other, and if you want to be a conspiracy guy, if it actually gets negative on, like, savings accounts, then it becomes a tax, essentially, for you to the banks and whoever else. It's also going to be an excuse to take money out of the system because your first reaction is going to say, well, if the bank's taking 1% from me, I'm buying a safe. And they're going to say, well, you can't have a safe because you're not going to be able to get cash. There's not going to be any cash. So one thing leads to another, leads to another. And everybody is absolutely flummoxed at this. Why would anybody do it? Why would ever allow anybody to do that? And it absolutely is so against anybody's grain. Why are we allowing somebody to do this, Kevin? What is the deal? Plus, the two places they've done it forever, it hasn't worked. It totally screws up the whole system. Now we have the Fed going out and buying corporate bonds. Whose bonds are they buying, Kevin? I've gone through this a couple times, and if a market doesn't have liquidity, like the money markets did in 2008, because we dug into the part where you couldn't get the money the next day in the money department, if the Fed comes in and buys that bond at a fair price, just so that money market group has liquidity to pay off somebody who's trying to make a withdrawal, that is the role of the central bank, the bank of last resort. You just go in and buy these things at higher and higher prices to make the money to market make money or take up a loss that they made somewhere else on something stupid they did. That's a whole different program. Now you're picking winners. Now you're wondering who the hell you're, which breeds kickbacks, which breeds everything else. Whose corporate bonds are they buying? Are they buying them because the bond market is illiquid? Well, if the stuff is at 3 or 4%, it's not illiquid. Okay. Now, if they're going to drive it to 2% or 1% or negative, they're just taking somebody like you or me, which says will never happen to us. We just paid 120 from a bond, and we're getting a knock on the door, and it's a guy from the Fed saying, would you sell it to me at 150? We're going to say, well, yeah, but why would you ever pay that? Don't worry. It's all for the greater liquidity. Somebody's making them out like a bandit on this stuff, Kevin. I mean, it's not you or me. It's the same people all the time.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm not.
No. But when they do something like this, I don't think the public that is exceptionally skilled in whatever they do. I mean, clearly you wouldn't expect even a doctor to understand this. Now, wait a minute, they're doing what? A bond is trading for 120 and that's the market price. They're going to go pay 130 for it. Whose bonds do they pick? I don't know. What, even if it's yes, they're talking about buying bond ETFs. Well, now, who knows that they're buying XYZ bond ETF the day before they buy it? How much are they going to run up the price? I mean, what are they doing? I'd like to know what they're buying so I can buy it for my clients the day before. I mean, what are we doing? This is so far afield. These are the same bleeps that run around and get some guy in Hong Kong for insider trading. I mean, there isn't, by definition, God, this is worse than the congressman. Well, almost as bad as the congressman. What are we doing to our people? Are we just, we're just blowing all this crap by them just to see how much, I won't say how dumb they are, because I wouldn't know anything about how to build a bridge or do a weld or anything like that, even though I walked by.
Don't go with dumb, go with ignorant and, you know, or uneducated or something like that.
Uninformed, because you're not.
Yeah, we don't do a good job of educating people, you know, through, I mean, these are the kinds of things that need to at least be, you know, a few days worth in high school, that, you know, people have some basic financial acumen, so that because we expect people to vote. We expect people to be informed voters, and yet we don't teach them about the things that are important policy issues.
Kevin, the last person asked me about what negative interest rates had a law degree and an MBA, because I never even heard of negative interest rates when I was in MBA school.
It wasn't a thing back then.
No. It takes a while to think about it. Why would somebody give somebody money and at the end of the day, I mean, if you go back to caveman era, I mean, certainly if you borrowed 100 rocks from a guy, you had to bring him 102 at the end of the year, right? Not, you don't bring him 99. I mean, even it is hard to explain because it's so counterintuitive. you know, why would somebody jump off a cliff? Well, I don't know.
I have a quick question for you off topic. A previous topic. We only have a minute left. Did Lori Lightfoot really say it's up to her, not the Cubs in MLB, or did you just make that up?
No, that's what they told. Well, again, that's what they said on the.
Because I'm Google searching that, because I would be amazed if that was true, and I can't find anything.
She
so
said
I'm
something about what Wrigley Field opens. It's a city decision, not a Cub decision. Which wouldn't. It is not
she
out of character.
It's a city decision for. I don't think that's.
For sports to open again, not an individual, not a Major League Baseball decision. That's what Joan Esposito told me.
Okay, so you didn't hear that.
No, but I mean, she's not.
All right,
I
don't think that was what was said at all. Because I hadn't heard that, and you kept saying that, and I searched it.
Somewhere buried in. Well, in.
Because that would be a big deal if that was true, but it sounds like it's made up.
What makes you think that she. She's not going to let some theater open without her okay. Why makes you think she's going to let the Cubs open without her okay?
It's not her decision.
What do you mean? She thinks it is.
No, you're saying that. She has not said that. That's my point.
She can't go. You can't go to the lakefront park.
She can close the park. She can't close a private
Maddie,
industry like that. They're gonna rely on MLB and they're gonna to make a decision.
Why do you think the Cubs have?
Well, that's Mayor Garcetti.
Why do you think the Cubs have?
They may be able to restrict the number of fans.
He's got Los Angeles closed through the summer.
They may be able to limit the number of fans. I don't think they can limit.
Did you not have your coffee? Why can't Nick open?
Nick is open.
He's given carry out. Why can't the Cubs could play baseball on the street? But
my point is that you can restrict fans. I think MLB has to make that decision.
I think she has the exact same power or thinks she has at Wrigley Field or Soldier Field or Cubs Sox Park as she does in the bar downstairs.
You might be right. I don't know. I was looking for those comments that you were making, and I don't think they happened.
She must have said something general. I mean, I don't know. They had the quote yesterday.
Anyway, I was just I'll keep looking and see if that's true. But I have a feeling it was made up, and I just want to make sure. You know, we have people that listen to us, and we're not Fox News or CNN. We shouldn't just make stuff up.
Let's put it this way: if you called lawyers,
I think NBC gets that role this week.
Well, that could them too.
I'm going to say if you had her cell number and you called Lori Lightfoot and said, "Can the Cubs open tomorrow without your okay?" She'd say no.
Well, I think it's a unilateral decision. I think a lot of folks, can weigh in certainly, but for her to say it's not up to the Cubs, it's up to me. I don't think she said that.
Okay. Well, I'll dig around today.
I will too.
Let's put it this way: I infer that she feels that way. So when I heard that, I didn't really debate it too much. I mean, I guess I should have, Maddie, but I was asked the question, so I didn't really. You know, it's hard to say. Did she really say that when that was a question I got? Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you on Friday. SP Futures now up 22. We're trying to make a comeback here. Again, we were down 85 yesterday, so about a quarter of the way back. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low and one page, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, we have Mr. Russell Rhodes. S&P Futures up 1975. Again, we were down 2%, like right on the close yesterday. We're back up 0.65, so say a third of the way back. As the futures up 81, so we had a big drop-off at the close yesterday. One thing we've just proven, Russell, is that Matt Weber could not work for Fox News.
Why can't he work for Fox News?
Because he is
he's not good,
making...
He's not good-looking and female?
Well, that's definitely true. He is good-looking, but he's definitely not female. he wouldn't mind, but he would. He's grilling me on whether Lori Lightfoot actually made this comment that I actually heard on another station when I was on there as a guest, where she... Anyway, the comment that came to me was that she said that it was going to be essentially her decision, not Major League Baseball's, when Wrigley Field's open up. Well, it turns out the comment wasn't exactly that, but that she was going to have discussions with him and blah, 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 which is a softer way of pretty much saying the same thing. I mean, she's not going to read about it in the paper and go with it, which is kind of where I'm at with the thing. So I think I was somewhat correct in what I said. I mean, she's not going to read it.
Can I tell you what my visual was with all of that?
Sure.
You know, when they open up the gates there and, like, they're giving away a bobblehead or whatever, and it's very crowded with lines of people, I visualized her, like, working her way up to the front of it with a bullhorn and just saying, go home, over and over again, and everybody just ignoring her.
Yep.
And you can only see the top of the bullhorn because she's only, what, like 4'11"?
Yeah. No, that's harsh.
That was my visual to try to put a little comedy on all of that.
No, I mean, the word now is the politically correct word is what? Vertically challenged?
she's, you know, we all have our own little challenges.
Oh, sure. Robert Redford.
My understanding is there's somebody that follows Trump around with hand sanitizer even before all of this because he's a little bit of a germaphobe. You think there's somebody that follows her around with a milk crate so she can stand on it?
Well, you know what? If I was if I was there with somebody who was, well, I used to be taller, but if I was very short and we were giving speeches together, I'd want them to be standing.
You'd want to even things out.
Yeah. Well, why would the camera look that weird with somebody up here and somebody down there?
It's like my father and my father-in-law are about a foot apart in height, and they were always kind of funny when they were together.
Well, you been watching any of the Bulls games and the Jordan rules? Or the Jordan thing, the last dance, and a couple of the times, Maddie, Bob Costas is standing between like two players, and God, the guy looks like,
oh my God,
yeah.
He's about 5'7", yeah.
Yeah, and he was with, God, he was with a couple of guys that had to be like 6'10", and he was in the middle. I'm like, wow. I was never the biggest guy I ever saw. I went to a Cub game one night, and all of a sudden, I turn around, I'm looking at some guy's chest, which is rare for somebody who's 6'4". I mean, you really don't find many people. Few people a couple inches taller, but not even on your basketball team. Maybe a couple guys are an inch or two, but you don't really see somebody a head taller than you when you're.
We have one guy on our team that's 6'8", and that's That's tall.
Yeah.
But everyone else on our team, yeah, is between, you know, 6'1 and 6'4, and we're all, you know, all kind of
well,
the
Bill
same.
Cartwright went by, and my eyes weren't even, they were shoulder height. They weren't even, he wasn't a head taller. He was a head and a half or two taller. I mean, he's a huge guy.
I got you beat on that one. I know.
You're cut off.
No, I think we lost him.
We lost him. I don't know. How many guys are taller than him, Eddie? He was 7'1.5" or something, wasn't he?
Bill Walton?
No, Bill Cartwright.
Cartwright? I thought he was like 6'11", 7 feet. I mean,
I thought he was taller than Walton.
Definitely tall, absolutely. But no one compared to Yao Ming, who I met in person.
Really?
Who was, I believe, listed at 7'6" or 7'7".
Oh, that's something. Yeah.
And I stood next to him. I stood next to Shaq. I've met Shaq twice. And a really nice guy, and also a huge man. And he was 7'1", but he was also 350 pounds of muscle. I mean, I've never seen a human specimen like that.
Well, John, we have a picture in the office of Dr. J next to Magic Johnson, and John's not a little guy, but he's at least a head taller, and his shoulders are half a foot wider than John. John's a big guy. I mean, those guys are all huge. I was watching last night. I had forgotten how big Karl Malone was. God, how did he have to go through a door sideways or what? Those shoulders?
He's a huge man, 6'9", and 270, but
easy,
just huge.
I'm going to take you over in a 270.
Yeah, and he might have been over that. Huge shoulders, huge arms.
But that was
he had a nice soft touch, like he could shoot it from 15 feet.
You know what was weird is I had forgotten. Was Stockton the last guy to wear what I would consider to be at my age regular shorts?
Yes, although those are coming back now. So now, in the college game and high school game especially, a ton of guys are wearing them, and it's going to start spreading, so it's trending back towards shorter. It goes in waves.
So what'd you do with Russell?
No one wears the big, huge shorts now that they did 10, 15, 20 years ago.
No, the ones that were, I used to joke that I never thought in my lifetime basketball pants would be longer than football pants.
Yeah, it's trending back in the shorter direction.
Well, I'd be happy with that. She goes, none of the ladies like to go any other way.
Yeah, I think it just doesn't, just from a competitive perspective, there's no way you play better in big, huge, baggy shorts that literally can hit the ball when you're dribbling.
Now, would you consider watching beach volleyball? Say, for instance, the ladies wore shorts down to their knees?
No, although I wouldn't really watch beach volleyball anyway. But if I had to watch it, I'd much prefer them wearing the skimpy bikinis as they do today.
Yeah, I think it's only right.
Absolutely.
So well, I don't know what you did with Russell.
Russell lost his connection and hasn't called back yet. So
he will.
He'll call back.
But it is stunning to me, Maddie, when I get essentially on a couple of these other shows how.
Actually, it's our connection that dropped. So once that pops back up, we'll call him.
Yeah, I think we're having some internet issues here this morning. You're right, because my quote page just went down. I don't know what the story is with that. We're the only people in the building. We shouldn't have much of an issue. But the. What I'm saying is that a lot of the stuff that's going on now and the amount of misinformation back and forth, we talk about it on the show. The one guy will say one thing, somebody else will say something else. Governors say this, governors say that. And it's inconsistent. I think if you don't, I'll use the term, talk to people that aren't in our industry or something like that, you don't realize how disastrous that is. Is it works its way down through the system where people have so much other stuff to do, they don't get a chance, don't have the obligation, don't have the misery of watching this stuff all day long like I do, and maybe a lot of the people listening to the show do. I mean, this is you know, outside normal common sense, and I think it's dangerous to be out there because I think our population is smart enough where they should have a pretty good idea, at least somewhat of a sense of what people are doing, and it makes. And that what they're doing makes some sort of sense. I mean, you shouldn't jam something like negative interest rates down people's throats when 99% of your people think it makes no sense. And A, if they don't understand it, and B, if they did, they'd say, why would anybody ever do that? That can't be the proper policy. I mean, how can something you would never do yourself all of a sudden be proper policy for a country? I mean, it's just, to me, that's just kind of odd. I mean, I don't know how you sort of get there. And I don't know how you turn that kind of a bus around. I mean, one of the things we didn't get to when I was on the show yesterday was she mentioned, until we got a couple of calls, well, why there's a difference between some of the red states and how there could be a political divide on what we do with this virus. This morning on the way in, you and I heard that University of California universities now are planning on that starting in the fall. Okay. Whatever. Not my call. But what I will say is just an opinion, and I don't know, I think people might agree with me. I will say that the idea that they have a 10-to-1 amount of people in, indirect versus direct. That means is for every teacher in the University of California school system, you have 10 people that aren't teachers that are, I've used the word indirect. I won't say hangers on because they obviously have a job. But they're indirect people. Well, politically, the only way you get the proper decision out there as to whether you open up that school is if you stop paying those people. Because they're going to say, hey, I'm afraid. Pay me. Okay, well, who the hell is going to pay you? People that aren't working? I mean, I think the big split here between the people who necessarily want to stay home and the people who don't want to stay home has to do with who's getting paid and who isn't. And I don't know, that seems very, very south side and very almost, sophomoric, but I'm not so sure it isn't 100% true.
I'll tell you that it might not be 100% true, but it's at least like 95% true. There's no doubt. The people that are out of work or are, had their work greatly reduced are the ones that are clamoring to get back. And then there's some other people that are working, like me, that also want to get back to normal or as close to normal as we can with proper, guidelines and restrictions as we kind of ease back in. And then there's people that are getting paid the full amount with no risk of losing their job for whatever reason that, of course, they don't want to reopen. Why would they? They get to stay home and get paid and be safe and judge other people. And you absolutely see that. There's no question.
I was reading, I was kidding around yesterday because a couple of people at one of the firms that I do some managed money for is a subcontractor because they don't do the protected index program, and I do, obviously. One of the things that I found something on the internet about, Manny, what do you call it? When you can watch what people are doing on their computer. I don't know, there's a name for it. In other words, if you were working home, they could know instantly what was on your computer, that kind of thing. There's a word for it. You know that I don't know. Kevin would know.
Were they remote into your computer?
Yeah. Where, in other words, I could see whether if you were on Facebook or watching some porn channel instead of doing your work.
Oh yeah, I don't know the word you're looking for, but yeah, you can absolutely do that.
And is if anybody, I think most of the people at some point back in their youth read 1984, where most people work from home, okay? But you didn't just get to work at home by yourself. You're in front of this big, at that time it was like a big TV screen, and they watched you. And in the morning, there was exercise stuff, and you had to do the exercise, and they'd shut out. Matt Weber, that sit-up wasn't good enough. Give me 10 more. It wasn't just a one-way street. Now, obviously, some people work at home, and they're call people, and people get the call logs, and they realize they're working just as hard at home as they would at their desk, okay? So, I get that part. But the idea, I know a lot of people, they're allegedly working at home, but I don't know what they're doing. And I would not be comfortable if I had 10 employees for a period of, 10 years that I never saw. When you see somebody, a lot of times you have special projects for somebody, and you see somebody all not that busy at their desk, you say, hey, I need help on this. You expect them to chop, right? If you're the boss, how do you do that from home? I mean, to me, it's not the same. I mean, of course,
I can tell you, so a couple things on that. And I would say you're, for someone that's never really done that, you're not far off. It's not the same. How could it be?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible. You're, here, 1 second, Russell's calling in.
Well, maybe we got him back. We got him back. We're back on, I think our internet has been blinking on and off and our phone's coming through the internet. So I think that's been I think this might have been our issue, Manny.
No, it was. Yeah, yeah it was.
You guys slammed the phone down on me.
Our internet,
I heard it. I was talking about Taco Fall and you guys got upset and just hung up on me.
I think our internet provider
didn't want me to win the I Met the Tallest Guy contest.
I think you're right, except it was our internet provider is a listener, and you came out and he slammed it.
Yeah, did I say something like whatever your provider is the devil because their customer service was awful?
Well, now you can say that because he was for the last 10 minutes.
Well, Reno on Twitter says Reno on Twitter says in response to your picture, how do we know that you're not just 5'4"?
Yeah,
I'm not just 5'4", but that's a good. But even if I was 5'4", that's a big freaking guy.
Oh yeah, he's a monster.
I mean, he was wearing pajamas too, and we're in the Admiral's Club.
And he may actually turn into a decent, serviceable pro, which you know, which people weren't sure. And he really improved throughout his college career at where did he go? UCF.
Yeah. You know, I went to Memphis, so we played them an awful. You know, so I was always very familiar with them. Because he basically, our little guys would try to drive the basket, and he'd just stand there.
Good.
So, well, I think he could dunk without jumping.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I don't know if you heard after you dropped or before, but I've met Yao Ming and I've met Shaq twice, and both gigantic men, certainly. But yeah, Taco is I think either the same height as Yao or an inch taller.
Was Yao bigger than Manute Bol?
I think they're maybe both the same, both 7'6". I'll search.
Can you believe those numbers? Probably can in the pros.
While I search for that, I'll let Russell answer your question. And you didn't hear it, Russell, but Chief asked a pretty good question about how, you know, a high percentage of the workforce is working from home now. What are the advantages and disadvantages of that? Because it's definitely not the same.
No, well, I'm going crazy. I'm just telling you that. I'm going crazy. I've been just really getting a little stir-crazy with all this. And I love my family, but they don't really want to have anything to do with me anymore as well. I'm an unusual person to talk about this because I work for a consulting firm, or I worked for one consulting firm that was based in New York, and I worked from home 3 days a week for years. So I kind of know the difference. I can tell you that I miss the human interaction of going downtown. The only time I've gone downtown through all of this was when I saw you last week, and then I went over to Loyola, and I was the only person in a 10-story business building for the day.
I'm going to say, Russell, that 3 days a week, 2 days a week is a lot different than five.
Yeah, no, I know, and I'm living the difference right now, and I, you know, and I just really enjoy the students at Loyola. I mean, they're young, they're not jaded. You know, there are a lot of people that are grumpy and jaded in our business. So,
it's
a little bit, you know, it's really good for me to be around them. But I think all of us are missing the social part. I have a funny feeling people will work from home more than they used to, and maybe employers are a little bit more comfortable with it. You know, there are some people, if you're not watching them, they don't get anything done. But I do think that people will have the option to do that a little bit more. I think it's in Chicago where it can be a real slog to get to work. I think it's going to be good for people. But I think we're all going to get back into the office, maybe not as much once all this stuff resolves itself.
I can tell you, for me personally, as someone who goes into the office every day and has now been working from home every day, the hour and a half, you know, it's 45 minutes basically when you take the train in the morning and then 45 minutes on the way back. And for some people, it's a lot longer than that. That's door to door, by the way. Walking to the train station, waiting for the train, riding the train, walking home. That hour and a half back every day is awesome. But I find that I don't take a lunch at all when I work from home. So I'm actually working more hours, probably. I find myself being busier and being unable to walk away. And no one takes PTO or anything like that now because why would you? You can't go anywhere. And so you're really just, I'm working more hours and have been busier. I know that's not probably the case for everyone.
I would say that everybody. Yeah.
But I like the fact that I would go into the office, you'd socialize, you'd go down and get a coffee, you'd go out for lunch with your coworkers, you know, you'd step away for an hour in the middle of the day on a nice day to go walk around, you know, downtown a little bit and grab your lunch. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm more productive now or less productive, maybe I'm the same, but I feel like I'm busier now.
I'll bet it's very individual. And if there's a day during the week at which it's all kind of research where you're writing something, and you don't have anybody else at home. You might, 1 or 2 days a week at home might actually be more productive. But some, when you're at work, you're finding out ideas from other people. But if you're at home with five kids, I don't see how
then you're buried.
Yeah, I don't see how that's productive. I mean, there's no such thing.
One of my best friends who's on my basketball team, him and his wife are both working from home, and they have two young kids. And it's impossible. I mean, like, you have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And,
tough.
And you can't take them to daycare. So they literally worked it out with their employer where, I think they go every other day. One works like a day shift and one works like a night shift, basically. Mm-hmm. So one can watch the kids during the day, one can watch the kids during the evening, and they can, you know, flip back and forth between who's working. And that's the only way they can make it work in their situation.
Well, you have one kid. He walks out with the leash in his mouth and says, "Let's go."
That's right.
He's the happiest guy on earth then, since you guys
are home. My beagle is just going to be so upset when I start going to work again. Although my new consulting gig's at a WeWork where you're allowed to take your dog. Can I bring my dog there?
Until my brother shows up. He's weird on that. I think he could probably, it's a dog friendly building though.
Okay.
By the way, just to put a bow on the height, Taco Fall, 7 foot five with an 8 foot 4 inch wingspan.
Wow,
that's a tall guy. But Yao Ming, 7 foot six.
You win.
1 inch taller, and then Manute Bol was 7 foot seven with an 8 foot 6 inch wingspan.
Yeah, that Manute Bol was still the tallest. God, he was skinny. He was a. Yeah. So Russell, with the Fed doing all they're doing, I was just saying earlier, I was on a show with Joan Esposito yesterday as a guest. She's terrific, and I get the flow from people that don't necessarily listen to a financial show. And boy, oh boy, the whole idea of negative interest rates, there had to be 2-3 people that wanted to call in and say, what do those even mean, and why would anybody do them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so far afield, Russell, from what common sense is for the everyday American. And I think if they actually knew that they were out buying bonds, most people would say, well, whose bonds are they buying? Why are they buying those? I mean, are they buying them to drive the price up to give people a profit, or are they buying them because there is no liquidity in the system, but at the price they're trading, it sure seems like there is liquidity. I don't think anybody has an idea of what these guys are doing. And you know what? This has been my whole educational life has been monetary stuff, because I love the stuff I learned from Friedman and those guys. I've kept at it my whole life. And obviously, since I've been doing the show, I keep up on the monetary numbers and everything. I have no idea what these guys are doing other than picking winners. And the amount of winners they're picking, we're talking millions and millions of dollars. I mean, what if you just bought one of these bonds like 2 weeks ago and these guys you thought you were going to hold
it? They turn around. Well, then you... then they buy it from you at a higher price, and you turn around and you put your money in the stock market, and that's why the stock market keeps going up.
Well, that's
yeah. Yeah, I had to explain that one late last week to someone about it. There was this impression that the Fed was automatically giving money to companies, and that was helping their stock price. And I go, no, it went through the multiple steps of how it gets there.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what's going on. And they're buying the ETF as well.
What is
that? That's the one that I was doing a lot of digging on last night and couldn't find. This is when I get frustrated that I can't go get on my Bloomberg. Because you can find who the biggest holders of different ETFs are off of a Bloomberg. I don't know how to do it if you're not in front of one, but I can't wait to see how much of like HYG, which is a high yield bond ETF, the special purpose vehicle that has been set up by the Fed, how much of they're going to end up owning?
Well,
because you'll see it at some point in the filing.
Just so people know, and Russell, kick me if I'm wrong on this, but when you have an ETF, okay, now I'm going to go through one. I assume, and Maddie's been trying not to assume so much these days, because I think I putzed a question on the show yesterday about Major League Baseball opening, but anyway, that's what happens when I do something without Mr. Weber. When you have an ETF, okay, what exactly is an ETF? An ETF is you're buying a share of well, anyway, let's take the SPY, the spider. What are you buying? Well, State Street Bank, and they're in Boston, right? State Street Bank has a huge, I'll use the term vault, although it's an electronic vault. They own a whole bunch of the stocks that if you own the spiders, all the people own the spiders, There's an equivalent basket of physical securities, not paper, but electronic, in the vault at State Street Bank. And you're essentially buying a piece of the vault. Correct, Russell?
Correct.
Complete with the dividends and everything else. The only difference is, in regular times, that's where they make their money, is they get the float on the dividends because they only pay you every 90 days and they get dividends pretty much every day. So they get the float until they pay you. And that's why.
And they get a little management fee.
Right. But the management fee was so tiny because they got the float. Well, now they're not making any money on the float, so.
Right. That's when people ask, how are they able to do that? We just answered that one.
Yeah.
Are they able to do a mutual fund an ETF that doesn't charge you a management fee? Well, they get to keep the cash and, well, are they really making any interest off of it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Now it's, they're not, but the mechanism is there's a specialist. Used to be a New York Stock. I mean, actually, he might have started out the Amex, if I'm not right. Way back in the 80s. I think he might have started out the Amex because I knew that guy way back then. Anyway, if everybody starts buying spiders, it's incumbent upon the specialist to sell you the spiders, essentially go short the spiders. Okay, I'll let the carrier say. He buys the basket of the 500 stocks.
Yep.
That's the specialist's job. And then we'll continue to see after the break. It's actually pretty interesting. S&P futures now up 20, and S&P futures up 82. That would sound great, except we're down 80 last night, so we're back, maybe not quite a third of what we were down. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. He's Mr. Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us as well. I got my machine working here. SP futures up 17.75. NASDAQ futures up 75. Dow up 150. Just for a review, yesterday Dow was down 457. S&Ps were down 60, and NASDAQ was down 189. So we're back about roughly a third of the way. So half of Fibonacci. He's like a two-thirds guy. DAX down 129, 1.2%. FTSE down 44.8%. CAC around down 68, 1.5%. These guys were closed yesterday when we started to head south, so that's sort of a catch-up. Nikkei down, these guys have been steady all week. Nikkei down 99.5%, Shanghai up 6.2%. Yesterday they were down 3, the day before they were like down 1, so they've been going nowhere for 3 days. Hang Seng down 65.3%. Bonds, 0.65, it's down, this is the 10-year yield, down 0.03%. Bund minus 0.52. Japan negative now, but negative 0.003. Oil, down a dime, 25.68. Brent up a dime, 30.09. Natural gas, 173. RBOB, 90. It's really weird how this natural gas spiked over $2 a couple weeks ago. Now it's back to 173. Gold, up 10.50, 17.17. Silver up 9 cents, 15.80. Maybe we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still crystal clear on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues to report in the entire area. No accidents, no slowdowns, no stalls, no significant road construction. Just a nice quiet commute if you're heading in to downtown or thereabouts. Everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, a bit warmer than it's been the last couple of days. Still below normal, but we're used to that. Partly cloudy with a high of 62 today. Right now it is sunny and 48 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 92. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the big news going on this week, as we touched upon in Hour 1, is the latest proposal sitting with the Major League Baseball Players Association about potentially restarting the season in a shortened capacity in July. It would be an 82-game regional schedule to include a universal designated hitter. So it'd be three regional leagues or divisions, if you will, the West, the Central, and the East. There would be no American League or National League. 30-man active rosters with a 20-player taxi squad. 14 teams in the postseason as they try to recoup some revenue by adding additional teams in postseason, assuming that we're allowed to have more fans come October, with games played in home cities in October. And then a 50-50 revenue split for players and owners. We had a question on Twitter asking about what do the players normally get. Well, I don't know how that breaks down. We'll have to look that up. But they are the only MLB, talking about here, is the only major sport chief that does not do a revenue split with players.
I don't think they do it, but basketball is what?
Basketball is 40s? Basketball is between 49 and 51, depending upon the projected revenue. Football is 48, and NHL is 50. But baseball has not done that, and they're proposing a 50-50 split here, and the players are saying, hey, we already agreed to prorated salaries. We're not going to do a 50-50 revenue split. We want to get paid our full amount for the prorated salaries.
Right.
And that's the hang-up right now, so we'll see how that progresses. But could have baseball as soon as 6 weeks from now. So
the players have they're pissed at the owners for the last 2 years because they've pretty much waged war against the old contract.
Yep, that's right.
We just really continue my quick story about how an ETF is made. Is that people start to buy the spiders, All of a sudden, the specialist goes short these spiders because he has to sell them to you. And he fills that up, but he goes out and buys the stocks to hedge himself. So at some point, when he's short enough of them, he takes the stocks, takes them over to Lakeside or the State Street Bank, takes them. He transfers them there, then they issue him spiders. Is that correct, Russell?
Pretty correct. The one thing, the little piece you jumped over was they actually can create spiders.
I thought the bank had to issue them. I thought the bank issued them, not the specialist.
Well, they can go to the bank, and they actually, part of what they do is, if there's too much demand, they can actually create them as the day is going along. That's all.
So then they
also have to go get all the, they have to hold the shares that the spider represents. So, like, for the SPY, they've got to hold the, they've got to hold the 500
right.
share.
So the bank has
in
to go.
The 500 stocks that represent the SP.
So the bank would actually have to go to a brokerage firm and say,
yep.
We're going to buy the basket, and here's some spiders.
Yep.
Because, because the Mantle Bay.
Yep.
The interesting part is way back in the day, Merrill Lynch, go figure, they're such a sweet group, tried to totally screw up the spiders. They didn't want anybody being able to save through anything like that. They wanted to have to mm-hmm. use their Merrill. So they would actually not allow people to, not only would they not allow people to lend the stuff out, they wouldn't lend it out, but they would actually call the specialist in on it at like inopportune times just to mess with the guy.
Yeah.
They're special people. But
they were taking advantage of what might have been an arbitrage, sort of.
The arbitrage was they were power.
taking advantage is the bigger word there.
You know what Merrill Lynch, back in the day, because I knew something about this, my first job was at Allied Van Lines, which is they're not even around anymore, but maybe they are still, but not much of the way. There are really no real need for them since now everybody can move furniture wherever you want to. In those days you couldn't. That's a story for another day, but we used to have, remember watch lines, Russell?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, everybody had my first trip is an out-of-college business school guy, is back in those days when you had watch lines. Watch line was a long-distance line that you could use pretty much.
An 800 number.
Well, that's now it's an 800
call
number.
In
yeah, right.
The charges got reversed to the person that answered the phone.
Well, there was inbound watch and there was outbound watch. You had an outbound watch. It means that you could call as much as you could get on that line 24 hours, you paid for in advance. Because individual long-distance call was ridiculously expensive in those days. Anyway, the communication hub of the nation, if you didn't know this, would be Omaha. And so everybody who had places like that had these little pillboxes with all these switching things in there. So I went to see Allied Van Lines, little, and on the street, Russell, there's got to be 30 of these things. They look like an army pillbox. That's the building looked like. A little office, couple people, and there's all this switching gear. And you walk in there, and that's what they did. Anyway, how does this tie into Merrill Lynch? Well, Merrill Lynch in 1977, 78, maybe for years after that, had by far the highest phone bill in the country of anybody. Calling their clients and stuff, and clients calling them.
Mm-hmm.
They had the biggest phone bill of any company in the country. Which you wouldn't know that unless you were hacking all the stuff like I was, but anyway, Russell, we've got a Fed who, let's put this bluntly, is, they're doing things, trying to keep, in their mind, things together, but they're favoring people, not favoring people, whatever. They're on this, just say, that, to my mind, they're running kind of a sprint. They're on a pace for economy starting to do better, I'm going to say, probably not the 45 days that everybody hoped for, but 60 or maybe 90 at the outset. We're not going to be here 2 years from now closed down and the Fed still create money buying stuff without having some massive inflation or them even saying it's no good. What happens to them when they do that and they get a guy like Fauci comes out and says, man, I don't know, I think we're going to have a vaccine in 6 months to a year and we got to, be real careful until we get one. And I don't think the Fed wants that year number flipping. They're not going to be able to do this for a year, bud. I don't think.
I don't think anybody in the business world wants that year number either. nor do I think people want that year number either. I think we're all kind of ready to get back to some semblance of normalcy, and you've seen it in frustration where people have been protesting. But businesses can't wait that long. They just can't. So you got to... And it sounds very cold-hearted, but we've got to figure out a way to balance all of this. We really do.
Well, what do you make of, I've been accusing, for lack of a better term, I think of some of the schism between go back to work and not go back to work really comes down to people that are getting paid and the people that are not getting paid in a lot of instances. Yeah. And the people who are getting paid, not all the time, but most likely are, people who work for governments, and the people who work for governments generally support the Democrats, and me being, you know, a former Democrat and kind of probably still much of a liberal at heart, but can't be with this group. this is a problem, and I was happy you're going to be on today because on the way in I was hearing that the University of California has decided they're not going to open up in the fall. Well, they've got 10 indirect people for every direct person, Russell. How the hell are they going to pay all those people in the fall? And they're going to have a few online classes, but give me a friggin' break. You're not doing engineering school, chemical school, physics. You're not doing it. There's no comparison. I don't think you don't need all those people if you're doing online classes. I'm sorry.
No, you don't. You definitely don't. You know, we don't at Loyola. Unfortunately, I like all those people a lot. You know, but from a business sense, we're going to have to figure some things out. There's going to be a drop in revenue because not as many people are going to go to school, even if you're opened up.
Well, I have the cost of
And you think it might be an opportunity to take a look at where you're overspending, but that depends on how much of a business sense you bring to the table. And I have a funny feeling a place like the California State System doesn't, you know, really think of it as a business because they probably, if they don't make a profit, the state probably bails them out one way or another.
I'm going to say, just saying, I actually dug through here once. They have 285,000 students fall of 2018.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that they have $100,000. If you look at the entire money they spend divided by the amount of students, it's $100,000 a year. I won't say cost, their expenses.
And you know they're not taking that in.
Yeah. What the hell? Over. I mean, how does anybody even? You know, the amount of people that are getting paid there. There's 300 people in a administrative facility in Oakland. It's not even near a campus.
It's just a call center or something?
No, that's where the Palatano and the Big Shots all work.
Oh, okay. Oh, they've got their own. Oh, kind of like you know, all the different school districts that we have in Illinois. Each one has you know, their own office building in addition, usually close to one of the schools.
Yeah. Well, it's Boeing having their corporate office in Chicago, a million miles from any of the factories, right? But I mean, does anybody think? I mean, has the public employee mind gotten to such an amazing spot to where any shred of common sense has grown over it? We've gone from people who are getting paid. By people who aren't getting raises, even though the people getting paid are getting raises, we've morphed into a spot where the people that are getting paid, the people that are counting on to pay them aren't even working. I mean, at some point, isn't the light going to go on even for these people? I'm not talking about individually.
I think there are, you know, just like you said, you went on a non-financial show yesterday, and the whole idea of negative interest rates was very foreign to, you know, people that were calling in. I think there's this actual belief that the government can just create money out of thin air and there are no repercussions to that.
The Fed is telling everybody that. I mean, Nancy Pelosi yesterday went out.
Well, you see that, but people that understand basic economics like you and me know that there does come an end to all of this. And, you know, like, I don't think I've been on here in months where we haven't mentioned the Weimar Republic at least one time. You know, but that's what Germany did. They just kept printing a whole lot of money, and the net result was the country eventually, basically what ended up happening was the country ended up being controlled by the government in every way, shape, and form.
You know what's interesting, Russell? I haven't had your
and then it turned out okay for 3 or 4 years, and then it really started to go downhill.
What ended up happening, and this is surprising because, we touched a little bit last week. By the way, a more recent example is Iran. The money supply ballooned. Stock market went straight up. Stock market went up every day. But in the Weimar Republic, you know what the odd part of that was? Is I finally found one that was just very deep dive. And since last weekend was cold and you're not supposed to go out, I went through this thing. And not only the whole start of it was, they owed reparations to France and England, which I think most people know. So they thought the reparations were too high. So the way to combat that was to devalue the currency. Okay, so they started printing out.
You know that I watched a video on this recently, and they were supposed to repay in pounds and French francs.
Well, but if they once they did they immediately started calling for a renegotiation, saying that they didn't have enough money. And when they started devaluing their currency, then they're saying, well, look, we're going to give you our stuff, but it's not worth so much anymore. Well, at the end of the day, they buried basically every poor German who had a savings account, right? Because his money is worth nothing. But the interesting part is at the end of the day, 3 years later, France and Germany did agree to a renegotiation, and actually, the government considered it a success, even though they buried every citizen.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to be careful when your government employees call things a success when you're in a breadline. I'm not so sure because in their mind it worked. They cut the reparations in half or by a third or something. Meanwhile, you and I are sitting there. We used to have a business. We used to have a savings account. Now we got nothing. And so it's, you know, you sort of have to be careful about who wins and who loses. We had a group in from Mexico years and years ago, and we still did all the seminars. And these guys, the night, this is back in the, had to be late 80s, early 90s, Russell. And the Mexicans had just, Mexican government, had just devalued their currency like the night before. So, and there were some guys that were, we had a seminar, and we went to Excelsior and had some cocktails. And, I'm talking to a couple of the older guys, and I said, well, you know, I feel bad. You guys, devalued your currency. He goes, what's there to feel bad about? I go, all right, run this one by me. What am I missing? He said, well, anybody who's in the know, connected, knew that the thing was going to be devalued. So we all brought turned our money into dollars, sent it offshore for that night or that week. They devalued it by 10%. We come back, now we got 10% more pesos than our neighbor. We're richer than we were before on a relative scale.
So what do you do if you're a US citizen and the devaluation's gonna hit?
Well, right now you have nowhere to go. What I'm saying is you have nowhere to go because every central bank is doing it. So you would say, if the U.S. was doing it, I'll go grab some, this week, if the Fed's going to come out with another $3 trillion package, I'm going to go put my money in euro dollars. But the problem is, it's on a relative scale, they're doing the same thing. So that's,
you know where I read that you're supposed to go?
Well, fixed assets for sure.
Well, not China. Well, they're still paying a positive interest rate. Now, whether you can get the money back, that's another
thing. But it's not the interest rate, because people will say, if ever I mention this to anybody, they'll say, "What are you talking about? The dollar's actually strong against the euro." That just means that the Draghi successor is doing more of it than the central bank here. It's a worldwide race to the bottom on currency.
There's no real escape other than, I mean,
well,
you know, you've got the commercial where you say you've never really been a gold bug, but gold might be the place to go.
Well, but anything that's fixed, because if you, and I actually asked yesterday, and again on the show, that's I said, Joan, would you or your listeners, if I were to say that the Federal Reserve is going to double the amount of money in the system this year, and you can walk into the Federal Reserve with your $1 bills and walk out with twos, have we created any wealth or any productivity? And she said, well, absolutely not. Everybody knows that. I said, okay, well, they're running it up 20% this year. And so far, it's actually up 15%. Here's the statistics, Russell. I'm going to say the economy is down 15% in the first 4 months, correct?
Yeah.
Roughly. Your stock market is even, and your money supply has gone up 15%. Is it a shock to you that those numbers match like that?
Yeah.
So what we're really saying is the dollar is worth 15% less. So in nominal terms, taking that into account, the market's unchanged, but really it's 15% less if you look at it in terms of dollars and not of share price.
You know, when we come back from all this and things suddenly cost more, which is already starting to happen, with the exception of gas, everybody's going to blame it on price gouging and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not gonna, and it's not going to really be this is me thinking out loud. Because I've heard people already complaining of some of this, seeing prices go up, and I wonder how much of it might be real, you know, the sort of inflation that we're talking about, which is engineered by putting too much cash out there.
Your quote from my heroes, Milton Friedman and Claire Freeland: inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. There's still people that consider the inflation of the early 70s. Not the Fed issue and going off the gold standard. I think it was the Arabs.
Oh, it was the oil, the oil thing where they cut us off.
Yeah, there's still people. I'm going to say 90% of the population. Why did we have inflation in the 70s? The knee jerk answer will be oil.
Yeah, that's actually always been my knee jerk answer.
But it would not. It just shows up there. Like this time, it showed up in medical care. And it showed up in tuition and taxes more than it has other stuff for the last 10 years. Last 20 years, actually. Right? The reason why we don't have inflation is because the CPI, if you take the medical care tuition, college tuition, and the piece of your home equivalent rent that is actually property taxes, the combination of those three is like 15%.
Oh yeah!
You tell me anybody who you tell me.
I saw a real inflation for urban areas calculation, and it was around 15% a year for Chicago over the last 5 years. If you throw all of those sorts of things in there, and we weren't the worst, it threw rent, which rent is just. I had not that I've been looking for an apartment to get out of my house or anything like that. Actually, I know somebody. I know somebody that rents near Loyola's, campus downtown, and they've got a two-bedroom for a wife, a husband, and two kids, and they're paying $4,000.
Yikes.
I never would have, it's been a long time since I've rented.
I'm going to say it's a nice two-bedroom.
But I never would have thought of paying $4,000 for an apartment.
I'm going to say that's a very nice two-bedroom.
They have parking. It's not out of control.
But it's,
really isn't. Pat probably knows people more than you and I do that have to deal with the rent thing, but I've just kind of been
shocked. Well, I'm just saying, since that is a lot of money, there's probably a workout facility, there's probably a pool, they probably have two parking spots, 24-hour doorman.
Do you want to know how you know when rents have topped out in Chicago?
We wouldn't want to be holding one of these buildings.
Sam Zell will start selling all of his buildings.
Yeah, well.
He's done it like three or four times.
A lot of these buildings now that were built all just for rent in the last few years, I got to believe there's going to be a massive move outside the city.
That little guy has sold an apartment out from under me three times in my life.
Why is he not in jail? How is he not incarcerated after he did the Tribune?
I don't know. You know, business.
Yeah, but he absolutely torpedoed the retirement plan to buy the place. It didn't work out, and he walked away like without any problems, and the retirement plan got destroyed.
Well, that, I mean, that's something that you're allowed to do.
Oh, well.
I mean, that's something that one of the things that I teach in corporate finance is that if your retirement that the retirement plan, depending on how it's structured, is the property of the company, not the employees.
Well, it was a Keogh plan, and, so yeah.
And it can offer it for a nefarious actor. It can actually offer a unique opportunity.
Is there a ring in hell for those guys reserved, or what?
Probably there should be.
So you're a what religion are you? Do you know how many rings of hell there are?
Are you talking about Dante? Or?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Dante.
Yeah, and the thing is, that was written so long ago, we've got to start making up other ones for things that he never thought about.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think nine rings. I don't think nine rings is enough. There's got to be a Sam Zell ring somewhere. Russell, thank you very much. Talk to you next week. Maybe we'll see you in the office. SP Futures up 13. As if he's up 62. We're about quarter of the way back. We were down yesterday afternoon. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.